Lying awake at night when you really want to be asleep is one of the most frustrating experiences, and not sleeping well can take a toll on other areas of your life. On this week's Please Explain, Dr. Matthew Eben of Weill Cornell Medical College's Center for Sleep Medicine tells us what normal sleep is and what happens when it gets disrupted by disorders such as insomnia, snoring, sleep apnea, restless leg syndrome, sleepwalking. Dr. Eben is assistant professor of psychology and clinical neurology at Weill Cornell Medical Center. Very pleased to welcome him to our show. Hello.
Thank you.
And WMIC is launching a new crowdsourcing project this month called Clock Your Sleep. We are inviting our listeners to go to WMIC.org/sleep to learn how to track their own sleep online or with our new app, and find out how it compares to everyone else's. If you want to join in this conversation, you can call us at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a question on our show page at WMIC.org. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So, Dr. Eben, before we get into sleep disturbances, can you first explain what happens to our brains and bodies when we fall asleep normally?
Well, basically, you go through various stages of sleep as you fall asleep at night, and there's a physiological process that goes along with falling asleep. Most people don't know this, but one of the best predictors of whether you're going to fall asleep or not is an increase in your hand and your foot temperature. And what that allows us to do is sort of offload our core body temperature and drift off to sleep.
But we're not taking temperatures of our hands and feet.
No, not generally. But certain ways of we've done some research in our laboratory where we manipulate this phenomenon to help people fall asleep.
Oh, so you can actually, let's say you had a hot water bottle and you put it on your hands, that might help you fall asleep?
Well, that's interesting.
Is that different than having a hot drink before you go to sleep?
What happens is your hands and your feet work as radiators to sort of offload the core body temperature. So what happens is your hands and your feet sort of heat up. You have an increase in blood flow to this area, and then your body temperature actually cools down. So certain things like maybe using a hot water bottle, it's something that would have to be tested, could possibly help your sleep. But the point is you want that sort of burst of heat, and then you want a cooling process to occur.
But then there's sleep and there's sleep. I could find myself drifting off to sleep and then suddenly start and wake up. That's different than deep sleep.
Right. So you go through different periods of sleep over the course of the night. So in the first third of the night, that's when you have deep sleep or slow wave sleep. And your arousal threshold is different during this period. It's harder to wake people up. And then as you go through the course of the night, the last third of the night is when you have the majority of your REM sleep or rapid eye movement sleep. And that's a more active stage of sleep.
We are told that we should try to get 8 hours of sleep a night. Does that apply to everyone?
No. So this idea that people need 7.5 to 8 hours of sleep is based on a national average. So on average, if you took a poll of people in the United States, they would need 7.5 to 8 hours of sleep. But it's a normal distribution. So you have some people who only need 4 or 5 hours of sleep. You have other people that need 10, 11, 12 hours of sleep. So every individual needs to determine what their sleep need is.
And Thomas Edison said, "Personally, I enjoy working about 18 hours a day. Beside the short cat naps I take each day, I average 4 to 5 hours of sleep per night."
Right.
But he took those cat naps. I can't do that,
right.
At least not when I'm on the air, although I'll probably have a few times.
So basically, someone's sleep need is calculated over the course of a 24-hour day. So if you take naps during the day, it's going to take away from your sleep at night.
In earlier times, before we had electricity, wasn't there a time when people would get up in the middle of the night and do work and then go back to sleep?
Yeah, that's what they call polyphasic sleep, where people have these different sleep periods. It really depends on what your sleep need is. So if you have a short sleep need, it's more common that you'd wake up during the night and have those breaks in your sleep. If you had a longer sleep need, you probably wouldn't have those periods.
Well, shouldn't children get more sleep?
Children do get more sleep. They need more sleep. And
during growth periods and when the brain is developing?
That's right. So when you have certain periods of sleep, like slow wave sleep or what we used to call delta sleep, that's when you have release of human growth hormone, and that's very important for kids. And kids get their sleep architecture or the type of sleep they get at night is different from adults. So kids get a lot more slow wave sleep, they get a lot more REM sleep, and their total sleep time is longer.
Although often teenagers find it hard to fall asleep but then don't want to get up before 10.
Well, that's a very important point. So that's a specific case, what's called a circadian rhythm disorder. So some people have they don't have insomnia per se, but their circadian rhythms are off track. So they want to go to bed too late and they want to wake up too late. And people need very specific treatments for that type of problem.
Well, we have a listener calling in about that very issue. Hi, Zach, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Yes, I would like to learn a little bit more about a circadian sleep disorder because I think that's what I have. And yes, when I get into bed, my feet are cold.
And how do you know that?
That my feet are cold?
Somebody tells you.
I have a circadian sleep disorder.
Right, right. Well, some people, just having cold feet doesn't necessarily tell us exactly how that relates to your sleep or gives us an indication that you have a certain type of problem. Some people do have a condition called Raynaud's syndrome where they have very very cold hands and feet.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily relate to a circadian rhythm issue.
Right. Well, I do find myself not being able to fall asleep until about 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning. And during the day, during normal daylight hours, I can sometimes take 4 cat naps.
Right, right. Do you have trouble waking up in the morning?
Not necessarily. I tend to wake up naturally, but sometimes it could be late if I have nothing that compels me to get up. I could wake up at 9:30, anywhere between 9:30 and 11 o'clock.
Right. So people who have a circadian rhythm disorder, it's generally they tend to fall asleep late, wake up late. But taking naps during the day can decrease your ability to fall asleep at night. It's a risk.
Well, let's backtrack and talk about circadian rhythms.
Right. So circadian rhythms are a set of biological rhythms that are slow moving. That's the reason why when you travel to Europe, for example, you have difficulty adjusting because you have these slow-moving biological rhythms, and they include your core body temperature. So you have changes in your core body temperature over the 24-hour day. Just to give you an idea, so circadian, it means circa, about, D, and day. So our endogenous circadian rhythms are about 24 hours, but they're not exactly 24 hours. So they need to be reset every day.
But some of us wake up at the same time every morning, whether the alarm goes off or not.
That's right. So that means that your circadian rhythms are set properly. And the way to set your circadian rhythms is generally through bright light exposure in the morning. There are certain other conditions that require evening bright light exposure, but light is basically the clock setter for our circadian rhythms.
My guest is Dr. Matthew Eben, Assistant Professor of Psychology and Clinical Neurology at Weill Cornell Medical College. We're talking about various reasons that people have difficulties sleeping through the night. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. On the other hand, depressed people often sleep a lot more than the rest of us. Is that because their brain needs that extra sleep to help them get through?
Well, when you actually look at people who are depressed, they don't necessarily sleep more, even though they spend a lot of time in bed. So they might have more fragmented sleep, but when you add it up, they don't necessarily sleep more.
What happens when we don't get enough sleep? Can it have a serious effect on our physical health?
Well, it depends why you're not getting enough sleep. So if you're chronically sleep depriving yourself, that's fundamentally different from having insomnia, for example. And there are certain sleep disorders that really fragment your sleep, like obstructive sleep apnea, for example. These individuals stop breathing when they sleep, and it wakes them up. It fragments their sleep. And
they wake up to catch their breath?
They wake up to catch their breath. They hyperventilate, and then they fall back to sleep. It can be associated with intermittent drops in their blood oxygen saturation. And that has its own set of problems. But just fragmenting sleep has been shown to affect your immune system and some other functions as well.
Hasn't it been linked to obesity?
It has. It has. So we find that people who have fragmented sleep, they tend to not feel full when they eat. So they tend to overeat. And that's associated with a fragmentation of your sleep.
What about mental health? Is it important for our mental health?
Yeah, there's an interaction between sleep disorders and mental health issues. So certainly people who have depression, they have anxiety disorders, they have a higher prevalence of certain sleep disorders like insomnia, for example. And it works both ways. Sometimes treating the sleep disorder helps the mood, and sometimes you need to treat the mood to help the sleep disorder.
Well, just speaking from my own experience, I generally get a decent night's sleep, maybe 7 hours. But there are nights when I don't sleep well for one reason or another. And then the next day, I'm never sure whether I'm going to be on top of my game or have problems. And it isn't always the same. There are some days when I feel like I'm really sharp and other days when I feel like I can't remember anything. And I blame them both on the lack of sleep.
Right, right. Well, sleep is something that you can't make yourself do. So I think we have to allow ourselves to not be on top of our game all the time.
Well, you say you can't make yourself do them. There was always the counting sheep thing. That doesn't work, right?
Well, no. This is what we call a form of creative visualization. So visualizing something to distract you from worries. This is something that can help your sleep.
Let's take a call from Lois from Merrick, New Jersey. Merrick, Long Island, I'm sorry. You want to talk about other ways that you can go to sleep?
No, I want to know if there's a difference between sleep that just naturally comes or if you're using a drug to go to sleep.
Right, right. Well, it depends on the drug. So there are certain drugs that can affect what we call your sleep architecture, the way you go into slow-wave sleep or REM sleep. There are other drugs that have little effect on your sleep architecture. But with any drug, there's always a possibility of hangover in the morning. So it's a complicated thing to answer. I can't answer it in a simple way.
I had a stroke a year and a half ago, and I have a lot of the things that have come back, but the anxiety is still there, so I can't fall asleep without Xanax. Is my brain getting healthy sleep, or is it not getting healthy sleep?
Yeah, a very specific question like that is, I would recommend that you go to a sleep center, have it evaluated. That's a complicated case.
But I understand what Lois is asking, which is induced sleep the same as natural sleep?
Right. So, for example, certain medications like benzodiazepine medications that were just mentioned, they do change the way you sleep. So they decrease the amount of slow wave sleep. They increase a certain type of pattern that we see in the brain, what's called a sleep spindle. So there are differences.
And can sleeping pills be addictive?
Certain sleep medications can be addictive, certainly.
There have been a number of people who have experienced sleepwalking and even sleep eating when they've been on Ambien. How do you explain that?
Well, Ambien's a very interesting drug. So when you give Ambien to certain people who are in a coma, it actually brings people out of a coma, and it puts them into a sleepwalking-type state. And when you give it to other people who are awake, it also puts them into a sleepwalking-type state, and they may have amnesia for the event. And that can be a problem. It's a very interesting drug.
Well, how do sleeping pills work? What do they do?
Well, there are various types of sleep medications, and they usually work as sort of a central nervous system depressant. But there are different categories. They work in different ways, so it's hard to give a global answer.
Let's take a call from Bruce from Manhattan. Hi, Bruce. You're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. I'm curious how important it is to sleep in an environment of total darkness. I once read somewhere that if you interrupt sleep with light or bright light, there are severe health consequences to that in terms of that disruption. I don't know if it has to do with melatonin processing. So can you address this?
Right. So certainly light pulses during the night can affect melatonin secretion. So generally over the course of the night, you have an increase in melatonin secretion to a certain point, and then it starts decreasing. But it's part of what we were referring to before as our circadian rhythms. But our eyelids are fairly good at filtering out the type of light that affects our circadian rhythms. But if you wake up, you open your eyes, you're exposed to bright light, it can cause a shift in your circadian rhythms.
But doesn't light also affect people? Some people just wake up because the light has reached a certain level of intensity, although that changes through the course of the year. But I'm thinking about why I tend to wake up about 10 minutes before the alarm goes off almost every morning.
Right. So that's a different question. We see that people who tend to wake up before their alarm clock, if you actually measure them, they wake up many times over the course of the night, and they actually check the clock. They probably don't remember a lot of these events, and that's why they wake up before the alarm clock. In terms of setting your circadian rhythms, light certainly has an important role. That's the primary way that we set our rhythms, and that is how our bodies really figure out what time to go to sleep and what time to wake up.
My guest is Dr. Matthew Eben, Assistant Professor of Psychology and Clinical Neurology at Weill Cornell Medical College. We are talking about sleep and sleep disorders, and we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We're going to take a little break, and we'll come back with more. We are back with Dr. Matthew Eben of the Weill Cornell Medical College's Center for Sleep Medicine. He's Assistant Professor of Psychology and Clinical Neurology at the Weill Cornell Medical College. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where handle is at Leonard Lopate. Well, we said that the basic topic of today's Please Explain is insomnia, and we really haven't addressed insomnia. Now, what is insomnia and how is it different from other sleep disorders?
So insomnia is difficulty sleeping, and it's also associated with poor quality daytime function or a decrease in your ability to function during the day. So people who get little sleep but they don't feel any deficit during the day, those individuals don't have insomnia. And there are different types of insomnia. Sometimes people have difficulty falling asleep. Other people have difficulty maintaining sleep.
Well, there are different strategies. If you have insomnia and you find yourself awake and incapable of going back to sleep, should you do some reading? Can you read on a computer or watch television? Or will that cause more problems? What about making some hot tea?
Right. Right. Well, first of all, it depends whether it's caffeinated tea. Generally, you don't want to drink caffeine when you're trying to go to sleep at night. Herbal teas, some people find them helpful. There's not a lot of evidence for that. But if you're going to read when you wake up during the night, it's best to leave your bedroom. So we don't want people to begin associating their bedroom and their sleep environment with being awake. So it's better to try to separate yourself. If you don't feel like you're going to fall back to sleep, get out of bed, do something that's not very exciting. You don't generally want to expose yourself to TV. You don't want to get a certain wavelength of light, which would cause you to shift your circadian rhythms. That can be problematic over time.
But people often fall asleep while they're watching television while they're in bed.
Right.
And then they wake up and then they can't go back to sleep.
Right. So why we sleep is really involved with two primary components. So we have this sort of sleep drive that builds up throughout the day, and we have a buildup of certain neurochemicals that we know are responsible for sleepiness. And when you fall asleep, particularly if you fall asleep too early, you can really decrease those neurochemicals that you need to help you sleep. And then the second half of the night, your sleep is really occurring because of your circadian rhythms. So sometimes if you fall asleep too early, you have to wait until your circadian rhythms kick in for your sleep period to really continue. And people often develop what's called donut sleep, where they fall asleep, they wake up for a couple hours. Once their circadian rhythms are ready to take over, they fall back to sleep. And that's a common type of insomnia that we see.
Do they get sleep that's as good as the sleep of somebody who just does it straight through?
it's possible. So there are plenty of people who sleep, let's say, 6 hours at night, and maybe they might take a 30-minute or 45-minute nap in the afternoon. But if you're napping, it takes away from your nighttime sleep. So you have to adjust your nighttime sleep to accommodate your nap.
A listener wonders if white noise machines are helpful.
White noise machines can be helpful if you have a lot of environmental noise. So, you know, if you know that on Tuesday night a garbage truck's going to come by at 3 o'clock in the morning, it might be useful to use a white noisemaker on that night. It can be helpful.
Narcolepsy seems to be the opposite of insomnia. What right. happens when someone has narcolepsy?
So narcolepsy is a very specific case of sleepiness, and these individuals have a disorder of REM sleep. There are certain features that can be associated with narcolepsy, like cataplexy. So people will have muscle paralysis during the day, and this is an element of REM sleep that's broken free from REM sleep. So narcoleptics have fragmented sleep at night, and then they're too sleepy during the day. It's a very interesting case, but it is quite rare.
Elaine asks if it's safe to give children melatonin if they have trouble going to sleep.
Well, that's controversial. So some people suggest that you really shouldn't give melatonin to kids. It may affect their sexual development. It is a sex hormone in animals. So it's unclear. There are some experts that believe it's okay. Other people don't. I think the jury's still out.
For children or anyone?
Your sexual development has really occurred, I think there's less of a risk. So for adults, melatonin can be used. But melatonin is a very interesting drug, and you can shift your circadian rhythms when you take melatonin, unlike a lot of other drugs. So it's really important when you take the melatonin. It's mildly hypnotic, but it can shift your circadian rhythm. So you have to be cautious when you take it.
Mildly hypnotic? So if somebody takes melatonin, you can make them cluck like a chicken without them knowing it. We go now to Ivan. Is it Ivan?
It's actually Ewan.
Ewan
yes.
From Manhattan.
How are you guys?
Hi.
I got a question, actually interesting thought, probably plaguing parents for thousands of years, or humans for thousands of years. I'm a stay-at-home dad with a 16-week-old son. And so I've had insomnia because when he first came home, I'm laying in bed. Is he still breathing, waking up, and so forth? Narcolepsy. Didn't get a good night's sleep, so I'm falling asleep during the day in the middle of typing an email. I'm just wondering, have there been any studies done, of parents with young children to see how that's affecting their circadian rhythms and to see really, you know, what's going on? Because the child obviously had a different rhythm. And now the parents are kind of forced into that cycle early on before they sleep through the night. And right now, I know I'm clumsy. I'm forgetting stuff. And I've basically forgiven my parents for all the transgressions that I perceived. So I was wondering about that. Anything like that going on?
Right. Well, that's interesting. So we know that it takes children a while for them to develop their circadian rhythms. And certainly parents have to attend to their needs. And when you're up at times that your circadian rhythms don't really want you to be up, it can affect your performance. So that's something that's well known. And really, there's no great solution to that problem. You just have to wait it out until your child's circadian rhythms develop, and things will improve.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Along these lines, Molly asks, because I want my daughter, who's 9 years old, to get as much sleep as possible, I have blackout shades on her window to totally block out the sunlight. Is it bad to use them all the time? Is her circadian rhythm being messed up with the blackout shades since she doesn't wake up to natural light?
No, I don't think that's a major issue. Most windows block out the wavelength of light that you really need to shift your circadian rhythms anyway. So I don't think that's a major issue. Certainly, if you're having trouble waking up in the morning, you should go outside. You should get natural light in your eyes. That will help you. But I don't think using blackout blinds is a bad idea.
Peter from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. So I have a business partner. He's relatively new to my business. I've been around for 3 years business wise. with the everyday stresses of the business and sort of finally convince myself when I'm taught, you know, that I shouldn't toss and turn in bed because there's really nothing I can accomplish by thinking about whatever is stressing me out over and over and over again. And I've sort of developed a mechanism to really shut my brain off and go to sleep, which is fantastic.
But what is your mechanism? Tell us, reveal
really,
it to the
really
rest of the world.
I literally convince myself that there's nothing I can do about whatever I'm stressing about, so you might as well shut up, close your eyes, go to sleep, and deal with it when you wake up and you're actually lucid.
Well, Peter, I've tried that, and then the thoughts continue nonetheless.
You know, it's taken some time for me to actually convince myself, but I finally convinced myself. My question is, you know, my partner is not there, and he's literally sleeping 1 or 2 hours a night. And it's, you know, it's making his work suffer. It's making our work suffer. And I feel bad for this guy. I really want him to get some sleep. You know, I've given him a pill of my, I always keep cyclobenzaprine because I have a very bad back. And I've given him one. It's great. It works. It knocks him out. But that makes him pretty worthless the next day, obviously. And that's not a good habit to get into anyway. But is there something, some way, something I can do to help him aside from, you know, telling him to drug himself with Benadryl or something, because he really needs to get sleep.
And is Benadryl a good idea, or any of those antihistamines that make you drowsy?
Well, diphenhydramine or Benadryl is something that has been shown to help people sleep, but you have to be careful. People feel hungover often when they take that type of medication. So you really want to do it in consultation with a doctor. In terms of non-pharmacological treatments, really cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia is a great way to treat insomnia. The caller mentioned a very important point, which is he realized at some point that he couldn't sleep, and he stopped worrying about it. And that's very important. You can't make yourself sleep. You can make yourself wake up, but you can't make yourself sleep. So sometimes you just have to give up the idea that you can try to sleep. And by doing that, it can really help you sleep. But going to somebody who's trained in cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, they can teach you specific strategies to help you deal with this type of problem.
Can you talk about sleepwalking and sleep talking?
Right. So,
how does that happen?
So sleepwalking is a phenomenon that happens much more frequently in children than it does in adults, but it can happen in adults as well. And it's something that happens out of slow wave sleep. So people who are sleepwalkers and if they're in a stage of slow wave sleep, particularly if a loud noise or something shakes their bed, it can induce a sleepwalking event. And people generally don't have a memory of sleepwalking when it occurs.
Unless they do something. We've had a guest who does a whole one-man show about, I think, crashing through a window while he was sleepwalking.
Right. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, microbiglia.
Sometimes people don't even wake up after these events. I've had patients who told me that they woke up on the floor in a pool of blood and realized they must have woke up, walked into a dresser, and then sort of tried to put things together in the morning afterwards. So often people know from their bed partners, or they'll see evidence. Sometimes people get up and they eat during the night. They might see evidence that they woke up and ate. They might see wrappers of food in their kitchen that they don't remember eating. People don't always remember.
And sleep talking? Is that just part of dreams for some people?
Well, so sleepwalking and sleep talking in general, they occur out of slow wave sleep. And dream sleep or REM sleep is different. So sometimes people act out dreams, and that's another type of situation. That's what we call REM behavior disorder. That tends to be more common in older people, over the age of 50, men slightly more than women. And that can be a more troubling issue. Certainly you should seek out treatment if you're acting out your dreams, because you can hurt yourself, you can hurt bed partners. Even with sleepwalking, that can also be the case, but they're fundamentally different.
A caller wonders whether a CPAP machine is helpful for sleep apnea.
Absolutely, it's the number one treatment if you have sleep apnea. So basically, a CPAP machine is basically a medical quality air compressor. It just blows air in your throat. It pops your throat open. Of course, you would first have to get diagnosed with sleep apnea, you'd have to go in and they would have to determine the appropriate pressure. But if you have sleep apnea, that's a great way to treat your sleep apnea.
Some people seem to be able to sleep through anything. Others wake up at the slightest noise. Is that determined by our body chemistry?
To some degree. So when you're in slow wave sleep, for example, it's going to be more difficult to wake you up than in other stages of sleep. And there's a variability in the type of sleep that you get. So some people just naturally get more slow wave sleep than other people.
Well, we are aware of what's going on around us. I know somebody who lived near a train that went right by. And when the trains didn't run on schedule, that's when he woke up.
Right. That's
because he had come, that had become part of what his subconscious expected in the middle of the night.
Right, right. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting.
So basically what we're saying is that no two people have the same kind of sleep?
That's right. That's right. So sleep is much like our bodies in general. You know, in terms of sleep need, people have different amounts of sleep that they need. In terms of their architecture, it's different. Just like, you know, people have different shoe sizes and wear different size pants. It's really the same.
A reminder that WMIC is launching a new crowdsourcing project this month called Clock Your Sleep. We're inviting our listeners to go to wmyc.org/sleep. Thanks to Dr. Matthew Eben, Assistant Professor of Psychology and Clinical Neurology at Weill Cornell Medical College, for being on our show today.
Thank you.